Welcome to the show, friends and neighbors, fellow would-be Antarctic explorers. My name is Ben.
My name is Noel. Ben, are you a fan of fruitcake?
I am a fan of food history, Noel, and I am a fan of food mysteries, but fruitcake itself, I don't have the same problem with it a lot of people have.
Yeah.
I'm just not super, you know, I don't lay awake at night dreaming of it.
Oh, yeah. Do you think anyone does?
I feel like there's some guy in England.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's one guy in England.
It has such a storied history, the confection itself, but it really has this reputation as just being something you could build a fireplace out of.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see Coco, the new Pixar movie? I think we talked about this in a previous episode.
I have not, but I do remember the conversation you and I had, particularly about the opening act for that film.
Yes, the much maligned Frozen-themed featurette that involved Olaf, the reanimated snowman, wandering around the snowy woodland tundra of Arendelle in search of Christmas tradition. And one joke
in search of Christmas tradition?
Yeah, he's basically trying to help out Anna and Elsa and help them find a tradition because they don't have any family Christmas traditions. So the whole short is him wandering around, talking to different people in the town about what their Christmas traditions are in song form. But one joke that I thought kind of landed is there's this fruitcake that is just indestructible, and it gets burned. Mm-hmm. It gets, you know, run over by a sled. It even gets taken by a hawk and eventually dumped back into the scene. So, you know, fruitcake has this reputation as being this bulletproof material, and that is very much the case with today's story.
Yes, absolutely. Today's story puts a little truth to the stereotype people have about fruitcake, often considered one of the more lowly desserts of the world. A combination of candied fruit, nuts, and spices, often heavy with rum and brandy. It turns out, as ridiculous as it might sound, there is some sand to the rumor. A 106-year-old fruitcake still in the original box was discovered at an outpost in Victoria Land, East Antarctica.
That's right. And according to the Antarctic Heritage Trust, which is a nonprofit based in New Zealand that seeks to preserve artifacts and history surrounding Antarctica. And a lot of that, as we talked about in our Who Solves Murders in Antarctica episode, involves researchers and expeditions. So according to the trust, the cake likely dates back to the Cape Adare based northern party of Scott's Terra Nova expedition, which took place between 1910 and 1913. And that is Robert Falcon Scott.
Oh, you beat me. That's one of my favorite facts of this place is that guy's middle name is Falcon. Yes. Captain Robert Falcon Scott, a British Royal Navy officer, famous for leading two separate expeditions to the Antarctic area, the Discovery Expedition and then the Terra Nova Expedition. He set a couple of world records in his time exploring. And luckily, Antarctica is not a place that is very peopled nor very populated, so it's easier for experts to trace back this fruitcake's provenance. And you're probably asking yourselves, super producer Casey Pegram, Noel, Ben, how long can we regularly expect a fruitcake to last? The answer is easily 3 decades and still be eaten. And as Noel said, this is, you know, a lot of the history of Antarctica is based in research. This was found in a research station, and the fruitcake was one of about 1,500 artifacts discovered in these huts at the Cape Adare outpost.
An interesting point of fact about this research station is that it was a series of huts, and they were actually the first ever built on Antarctica. So they were historical in and of themselves, even at the time. They were built in 1899 by a man named Karsten Borchgrevink, who is a Norwegian explorer, and then was used for several of Captain Scott's expeditions. Mm-hmm. And also other members of his party.
And here's how it went down. 2 months after the expedition had launch their endeavor to reach the geographic South Pole, they finally made it. It took them 2 months, but they made it just at the very beginning of 1912, January 17th. And when they got there, they discovered a real kick in the pants for explorers.
Yeah, they had been beaten by, I think it was mere weeks, mm-hmm. am I right, Ben, by a Norwegian expedition.
Yeah, 33 days prior to the Scott's expedition reaching the pole, an expedition by a Norwegian operative, I don't know why I'm saying it like he's a spy, named Roald Amundsen had reached the pole. And as an additional complication, an additional and terrible kick in the pants, blizzards delayed the return, and this delay became permanent.
Yeah, it's true. They did not make it back alive, but they did have some pretty lap of luxury as far as Antarctic expeditions go, mm-hmm. moments prior to that in these huts that we talked about earlier. There's a fantastic image on an article from How Stuff Works by Laurie L. Dove that pictures Scott and his team gathered around a gramophone, listening to music, puffing on their pipes. And then I found an article from the BBC with another image inside where they're gathered around a table with beer and all kinds of different foods. And they apparently had access to fresh bread, rhubarb pie, and they would make their own stews and curries, mm-hmm. a lot of times out of seal meat. That's according to Joseph Coulson in the article Scott's Antarctic Diet, Stewed Penguin and Champagne. So, right, stewed penguin. Apparently, they used penguin blubber to try to cook with, but they realized that that was a pretty foul-tasting cooking oil, so they kind of ditched that. But they would have several courses to their meals, including things like roast beef, turtle soup, and stewed penguin breast in various jellies and crystallized ginger, and they had champagne a-flowing. So, you know, at least when they were trudging to their death through the frozen wasteland, they could, you know, have some fond memories of hanging out and, you know, partying down with penguin meat and champagne.
Mm-hmm. Especially in such a brutal Antarctic climate. It's tough to fathom how important even the smallest luxuries can become. There's a reason they took fruitcake as well, because it has this staying power. And although fruitcake is often a punchline in conversations in here in 2017, as we record this, oh, at the very end of 2017, for ages past, fruitcake was both a reliable foodstuff and it was itself, it seemed to be luxurious. According to an article in the Smithsonian by Jesse Rhodes, ancient Romans made something that was fruitcake-esque, a mishmash of barley, pomegranate seeds, nuts, and raisins. And the descriptions of it all make it sound kind of like an energy bar. Quick backstage peek here at the Ridiculous History office. We have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to energy bars, and we're trying different ones. But I got to say, man, maybe that's why I'm off fruitcake. Maybe an energy bar is too close. The modern fruitcake can be traced back to the Middle Ages because dried fruits became more widely available and fruited breads entered Western European cuisine.
It's not a Fig Newton. It's fruited cake.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And there are different regional variations of this, but it makes sense when you are thinking from the viewpoint of an expedition, right? You want to bring stuff that you can transport easily so it doesn't weigh much and it's not going to spoil, because your only other alternative is going to be a catch-as-catch-can pursuit of the resources in the area, like the penguins.
Lizzie Meek, who is the artifacts manager for that Antarctic Heritage Trust, says in a statement regarding the ancient fruitcake that it was ideal for Antarctic conditions because it was high energy, and it's actually still a favorite today when people are making these kinds of journeys. And it turns out that the company that manufactured this fruitcake is a company called Huntley & Palmer's, a British confection maker. And they were very popular, and they exported their products all over the world. And the company itself actually boasts that their products – have turned up in some of the most unexpected places. Mm-hmm. And that is no joke. When this fruitcake was discovered, folks from the trust described it as having a very, very slight rancid butter smell. But other than that, it was in pretty good shape.
Yes, they transported this time capsule fruitcake, for lack of a better term, to a lab in Christchurch, New Zealand, a lab that was operated by the Canterbury Museum. And the plan is to clean the fruitcake's container, which is a tin. So they want to remove the rust from that. They want to stabilize it chemically, and they want to repair the wax paper covering the cake. And then, to me, the weirdest thing is after they restore the fruitcake, they're taking it back to the hut where it was found.
And that's because it is considered an Antarctic specially protected area, which I'm imagining, does this mean they're recreating those conditions so that you can go check it out, sort of like a moment out of time, or like going to, you know, visit the boyhood home of a president or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So specially protected areas start showing up around 1964 as part of several international agreements. And since its inception, the ATCM has emphasized the need to protect sites or monuments of historic interest. So you're absolutely right. That is one of their primary goals, along with, you know, environmental protection and conservation. So if we as a group, you, me, Casey, everyone listening, and a mysterious stranger that you'll meet eventually, if all of us hightail it to Antarctica and we build something, and hopefully we don't die, if it is deemed of historical significance, these would be the people protecting it.
Exactly. And the New York Times spoke to a guy named Matthew Williams, who manages the Reading Museum, which is where this biscuit maker was headquartered and is headquartered, I believe. And he says this: modern research has shown that the Polar Party's daily ration of 4,100 calories was 800 calories short, and their diet was deficient in vitamins as well as energy-producing elements. So part of their downfall was that they just kind of did the math wrong as far as what their rations were. And apparently also they focused much more on protein, too much on protein, and less on vitamins, minerals, and fats.
And this is hugely important. I'm really glad you brought this up, because there's a thing that can occur when you are subsisting off entirely protein, and it's something – it's called rabbit starvation. That's how I heard of it. But I think the more proper name is protein poisoning. So it is absolutely possible to feel like you're eating an adequate amount of sustenance, but slowly undergoing
–
yeah, slowly undergoing terrible – terrible medical consequences, which, by the way, this is a dark fact, Noel, but that's one of the reasons, I think you and I talked about this on a different show, that cannibalism, survival cannibalism, is such a bad decision, because by the time people finally violate that taboo and consume human flesh, they're consuming the flesh of someone who is already starving and they're only really getting protein. So they just enter a different stage of starvation. Speaking of fantastic segues, I don't want to stop on a cannibalism note. I looked into other old foods, and I found this great article by Mental Floss by an author named Therese O'Neill. And folks, if you're a fan of our show, then you probably already are aware of Mental Floss. We actually hang out with the founders, who are super cool, Will and Mengesh.
Yep.
And they have a show called Part-Time Genius, which we appeared on.
It's true. We talked about IKEA furniture, didn't we?
That's the one.
They quizzed us, and they were a much more kind, gentle quiz master than we're maybe used to.
Casey, can we get a little foreshadowing music? Just a little. There we go. Yeah, Noel, you're absolutely right. But first, we'll explore a couple of other examples of ancient foods, and I want to see what you think of these. So first, wine, right? How old can wine be?
Isn't it like the older the better, kind of?
And that's what people seem to say, and sometimes if mishandled, it can turn to vinegar.
Right, but they, people talk about a good year, and some of the ones that are like really revered are quite old.
Yes, so excavators in Germany found the oldest known wine that is still in a liquid state. It dates back to the Roman era. They found it in a sarcophagus along a bunch of other wine bottles that had dried up, and it's been aging for 1,600 years.
Jeez, do you think that would get you really, really lit, or would the alcohol kind of diminish over that long a period?
Apparently it's the latter. The alcohol content is gone after that long, so there's probably a window of time for good wine. Burnt British bread was discovered that was 5,500 years old.
Wow.
Not edible.
No, I'm sure. Yeah.
bone soup, which does sound like something I would try, was discovered having turned green over its 2,400 years of storage. It still contained bones, but they did not eat them. This was discovered in China.
Bone soup, like broth?
The broth evaporated.
I see.
So they really just found the bones that had been sitting there for a while.
With a green gelatinous sludge of some kind.
Yes, yes. And then people have also found beef jerky that was buried in Wanli, China.
Well, that lasts forever, right?
I was hoping so, man. It had it was 2,000 years old, and it was a black and green carbonized mess described by the archaeologists. None of the people are trying to eat this, which is – I guess I understand it. But out of all the old foods that you and I found when we were looking into this, the fruitcake is unique because, again, despite that very slight rancid taste, it could still be edible. And one of our questions today is – what's your opinion of fruitcake? Do you think that we have been doing a disservice to this noble? I don't know. To this culinary tradition?
You know, Ben, I don't think us spilling any ink over fruitcake is going to really change its legacy. I think it's pretty well entrenched.
You don't think we're fruitcake influencers?
I don't know, man. I just feel like its day in court has passed. You know, I feel like, you know, the cultural place of fruitcake is pretty solidified, and nothing we say or do is going to change that.
It's pretty congealed.
Ooh.
Ooh. Noel, this is not, however, the end of our show, is it?
No, it's not. And what is that ominous music?
Oh boy, I'm getting nervous. This seemed like such a good idea before it was actually happening.
I'm scared.
It's time.
Jonathan Strickland!
That's the quister to you guys.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, welcome to the most cringeworthy segment in all of our podcasts across all of our brands, gentlemen.
Where did you even come from?
I've
been under the table the whole time, and Ben, you've been kicking me for the last 12 minutes.
I got restless legs, man. I'm sorry.
I noticed. So here's the thing, gentlemen. I have decided that to truly become experts in ridiculous history, I'm going to test you on your knowledge of truth versus fiction. I will present to you occasionally a scenario, and you must decide within the time span of 3 minutes.
Oh, man.
Whether or not the scenario I give you is real or fiction. Now, you will be able to talk amongst yourselves. You may even pose questions toward me, the quizster, should you feel that necessary.
May the questions be posed in the form of questions.
They may be, but yes. I'm glad you brought this up, Noel, because I think this is far too simple if I just give you a scenario and you just give me an answer.
But that seems okay.
But I respect you, Ben.
Oh, no.
So
what about me?
I like you, Noel.
Wow.
So
wow.
I am going to make an arbitrary rule every time I appear on this show that will pertain to that and that time only. So next time I'm here, this rule will be totally different. But today, the rule is, should you wish to pose a question to me, you must preface it with the phrase, "Quister, I have a quick query," followed by your question.
Quister, I have a quick query.
Every time you want to ask me a question. Now, do you have a timer ready for 3 minutes?
We do.
Excellent. I like that. It's wow, that's enormous.
It is a cartoonishly large timer.
It takes up an entire wall of the studio. I don't know how I missed it.
It's a grandfather timer.
Yes.
I will point to you, Ben, to start it, but I'm going to read out the scenario first, so that way you will have a full 3 minutes. And feel free to answer before the 3 minutes are up, should you feel confident. And
let's
now,
do this.
All right.
Here is your scenario for this week. Gerald Jerry Scribner not only made history, but ate it when he mistakenly consumed a tin box filled with 110-year-old chocolates, which were actually meant to be a museum piece sponsored by the St. Andrews Preservation Trust. Begin the time.
Okay, so he ate it?
He ate it, but quizmaster, I have a quick query.
Close enough.
Quister, whatever. Did he work at the museum?
He did.
Okay.
Okay, so he worked at the museum.
Well, says him.
Yeah.
He's the most unreliable narrator we could possibly have here.
Quister, I have a quick query.
Yes.
Are the answers that you give us true?
Yes.
Wait, I didn't think that out very well, did I? Okay. Quister, I have a quick query.
Yes.
Could you briefly restate that?
Certainly. All right. There was this box of chocolates.
Okay, 110 years old.
Box is made out of tin.
Okay.
T-I-N.
Okay.
The chocolates themselves date from, 110 years to the point where he ate them. The actual box of chocolates was first gifted to someone in 1902. And this museum employee, Jerry Scribner, Gerald to some, mistakenly consumed the chocolates, thinking they were simply chocolates and not realizing they were meant to be put upon display.
Okay, I would argue that Jerry Gerald worked at a museum. He would know pretty well whether he was looking at an artifact like an old ancient box of chocolates or if it was something to be consumed. So I am leaning towards false.
Okay, I think that's a really good point because, you know, you would expect there to be some sort of bar for employment in a museum.
You would think.
And not a chocolate bar. But I'm wondering, because of the specificity, I'm wondering if it's true.
Huh.
You
but
know?
Jonathan is a very pedantic quizmaster. He's going to, you know, down to the detail, try to trick us every chance he gets. So I don't know.
Gosh.
I don't know. It rings true.
Yeah.
But it also, I really think Jerry Gerald, you know, if he was worth his salt as a museum employee, would know he was looking at an artifact and not a delicious treat for him to consume.
Also, and let's be honest, Jerry Gerald doesn't sound like the most plausible name. Jerry Gerald Scribner.
Gerald is his name. Jerry is what is in air quotes.
Okay, man, I got to tell you, we've got 30 seconds, Noel.
You didn't follow the rule, though, so you get an electric shock.
You're right. Sorry about that. I was so excited to just follow along with your amazing journey.
Okay, I feel like it's true.
Wow.
Yeah, we're at an impasse.
I feel like it's false.
Do you want a death match, rock, paper, scissors?
16 seconds. Let's go. Rochambeau.
Okay. All right. One, two, three, shoot. One, two, three, shoot.
Okay, first was scissor. That was this next
second
one was scissor, paper, me.
Which means we're going with false.
Oh, okay. All right.
Right? Because you said false. You
I guess
won.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, and that's our time.
Ah, time is up, gentlemen. Congratulations. The answer is false.
In fact,
the St. Andrews Preservation Trust did have a 110-year-old tin of chocolates. They were gifted from a mother to a daughter after the mother had received them as a gift upon King Edward's ascension to the throne, handed them over to her daughter. She did the same to her daughter, so on and so forth, until they gave it to St. Andrews Preservation Trust. It is in a museum. It is on display, uneaten. Scribner was a complete fabrication.
All right. Hey.
I hated that with every inch of my being, but I feel good about it.
That was a lot of fun. We did not think it was going to go down to a rock, paper, scissors death match.
I like it because it tells me two things. One, you are both very clever. And two, I'll get you next time.
Now be gone, demon!
Ladies and gentlemen, our evil quizmaster, Jonathan Strickland.
I can't. Can someone open the door?
Oh, yeah.
I can't open the door from this side.
That's true. Well, thank you so much for coming. And, Noel, I owe you a personal thanks because we would have gotten that incorrect on our very first time out.
And God only knows what happens when you get it wrong.
I know.
Mean, you got an electric shock just for not following his sinister rules.
And I already had jittery legs. It's going to be a rough afternoon for me.
I've developed a jittery leg just from this whole thing. It has stressed me out. But we hope you guys found it at least a little bit enjoyable.
It really was like there was high anxiety going on there. Yeah, we hope you enjoyed it. This is not the last you have heard of our historical quiz-centric arch nemesis.
Yeah, I have a feeling he'll probably materialize again.
I'm still here.
I think he's still here. And we are going to head out. We hope you have an excellent end of the year. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We do not have a MySpace.
No. Well, I do still floating around out there somewhere. You can look for it. Noel Brown. MySpace.com/Noel Brown. I was one of the first to get like a personalized URL.
Nice.
Yeah. I was one of the original verified MySpacers, in fact.
Oh, wow. Hey. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I was friends with Tom.
Getting to know you.
You wouldn't even mention that this is kind of a Christmas-themed episode. Holiday-themed. How about that? Because fruitcake does hold a special place. It's not even Christmas-centric. It's just like a weird thing your grandmother gives you, whatever her religion is. Mm-hmm.
And if you were a fan of a fruitcake and you have a really amazing fruitcake recipe, send it to me and I'll try to make it. And maybe we can all get together here in the office and give it a shot.
Can wassail.
Yes, and we will wassail. And for now, we're going to wassail away. Save me here, man.
Wassail away, sail away, sail away. But send us your fruitcake recipes, ridiculous@howstuffworks.com, all the social media stuff that Ben mentioned, except Pinterest. And we hope to see you next time on a new episode of Ridiculous History. And happy holidays, everyone.